the world is going through changes. Changes happening at a speed that we have never seen before. This is leading to disruption, chaos, panic, fear, hysteria, and a turbulent economy and marketplace. How do you protect your wealth in a turbulent world? How do you invest for cash flow in alternative assets to escape the rat race in times of uncertainty? How do you decentralize yourself, your family, your community, your business, and your investments to become sovereign and escape the matrix? If you are looking for strategies, tactics, and techniques to escape the rat race and matrix, you are in the right place. My name is MC Lobsher, and this is Cashflow Ninja. This is Cashflow Ninja. I'm MC Lobsher. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Cashflow Ninja and spending your most valuable resource, your time, once again with me. I've got a fantastic show for you today, but before we jump into that, everything Cashflow Ninja is at cashflowninja.com. And just to give you an update of everything that's going on at cashflowninja.com, I have a book, The 21 Best Cashflow Niches, Creating Wealth in the Best Alternative Cashflow Investments. It's available at cashflowninja.com. I also launched a newsletter, the Best Cashflow Niches newsletter, in which I share every single month a brand new researched alternative cashflow investing niche. You could sign up for the Best Cashflow Niches newsletter at cashflowninja.com. And then, of course, my mastermind, Cashflow Nirvana, if you're a business owner or an investor that's looking to protect and build wealth during turbulent times, you can join a community of business owners and investors that's looking to do the exact same thing. You could go to cashflowninja.com and on the homepage, sign up for the mastermind. I've got a fantastic guest for you today. Max Wright, he's a returning guest at the Cashflow Ninja. You could go to cashflowninja.com and type in Max Wright and listen to the previous episode. He always provides a ton of value. Now, Max has been an incredible analyst and caller of crypto cycles, and more specifically, asset class cycles such as real estate and Bitcoin. He really nailed Bitcoin. The last cycle called when it was going to start to go up, and called when it was about to bust. So I'm really looking forward to getting his take on what's going on in the world and learning more about what he sees in the Bitcoin space. He's also conducting a webinar, which you can join at cashflowninja.com/max, in which he shares the three phases of the coming collapse and which asset classes will skyrocket and which will get destroyed in each phase. Wouldn't that be something worth knowing about? Go to cashflowninja.com/max and you will get access to that webinar. Not salesy at all. Very, very content rich. Highly recommend it. Max, great to see you and welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah. Great to connect again. For folks that are not familiar with you and what you do, can you please just share a little bit of your background and your journey and what you're up to these days?
Sure. I mean, I grew up in Australia, so fun being on this podcast. People are used to the funny accents. grew up in Australia, like lovely middle-class family. Parents are still alive. Awesome. Great. I've never inherited anything. But so started from nothing except a wonderful, loving family and, basically retired by the time I was 30 and did that, starting businesses, growing businesses, online businesses. Eventually did a 7-figure exit, moved to the Caribbean and figured out I had all this cash that I needed to figure out how to invest. It just so happened to be 2012. And for the past 10 years, I was absolutely fascinated in monetary theory and central banking and fiat currencies. And so I was lucky enough to have a world of knowledge there that when someone explained Bitcoin to me, I was like, well, let me show off and tell you why that's not going to work and use my big fancy economics brain here. And it turned out a month into it, I'm like, oh my God, this thing's going to save the world. And so basically became devoted to Bitcoin in very late 2012, probably early 2013. And so, had a place to invest my money, which did very well. continued buying and selling businesses, continued investing in real estate, diversified into real estate. At one point, I had like 10 Airbnbs, I believe. I don't have any of those anymore. Continue with the online businesses, huge advocate of crypto and trying to save the world, one Bitcoin at a time.
Very nice. Now, we've got quite an interesting kind of scenario playing out, a bunch of storms all coming together, whether it's in the monetary system, the de-dollarization, whether it's the digital central bank currencies, the CBDCs that are coming, whether it's the banking and the financial crisis, which has started and gaining some steam. Looks like it's gonna really pop by at least the fall. And then, I mean, we've got so many other different things going on, whether it's pandemics, whether it's green agenda, whether it is immigration problems all over in the West, countries literally being invaded. Talk to me about what are you seeing out there right now? What should business owners and investors be aware of? Because you study cycles, you study economics, you've taken a look at all these things. How do you see the world currently?
Yeah, it's very much, if you don't feel like the frog in the boiling pot, then you're not paying attention because, the temperature's been turned up all over the place. And look, at some point, it has to crescendo. I wish I could say it was going to be on this date and, stay invested in all of these things as they continue to go up and then just get out at the right minute. But that's very, very hard to do. And even the order in which these things are going to take place, is commercial real estate going to go down before China invades Taiwan, before the next pandemic? Who knows the timing of things? It's very, very difficult. I made a video recently and I was talking about price predictions, and I know but for the guys who are at home here, I've been very, very successful in predicting the major booms and busts in the Bitcoin cycle. And yep. I tell people, it's like, I got involved 2012 through to 2020, it was relatively easy to do. I felt like a guy in a rowboat on a gentle stream with a gentle breeze at my back, and figuring out where Bitcoin was going to be in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years was pretty darn easy, I have to say. Now I feel like I'm in the middle of a storm. There's tsunami-sized waves. I'm in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. There's lightning strikes going on, and I can see the storms all around me. And someone's saying, "Well, where are we going to wash up? Are we going to wash up, in Japan or California or Australia or whatever?" And I was like, "Dude, I don't know if the wind's going to be stronger than the waves or the lightning strike's going to split the boat in two." And it's getting hard. So it's very, very hard to make really kind of timely predictions here. But I kind of come up with a formula to kind of navigate all of these things. I had to think very, very deeply about this because there's so many things everywhere. And what's going to happen first is who the hell knows? And everything's going to affect other asset classes a little bit differently. But I kind of came up with the Bitcoin bungee theory. And that's what I'm calling it. And it's basically the concept, no matter which crisis you want to look at, and we'll go and look at a handful of crises in depth here in a second. But no matter which crisis I look at, basically, everything is like an oh shit moment. De-dollarization. The BRICS nations are going to abandon the dollar soon. It's like, okay, oh shit moment. What the hell does that mean for the world economy? And basically, that signals risk off. It's like, let's get out of real. Things are going to get crazy. We need to sell assets, sit in cash, be in a safe position. And then there's probably some crazy times and we'll be able to jump back in and buy things for cheap later, right? So what that means is there's like, okay, risk off assets go down, stocks go down, real estate goes down, cryptocurrency goes down in the nominal price I'm talking about. But then depending on the crisis, depending on the asset, they might go down and stay down. But there's something very interesting about Bitcoin is that it's basically the solution to all of the problems. And it even sounds ridiculous. When I say that out loud, I'm like, am I like an evangelist? Has this become a religion for me? Because who the hell says something that's ridiculous as Bitcoin solves all the problems in the universe? It seems ridiculous. And yet when I go through and look at each of these things, it's the solution I come to is basically that. Because the very high level problem, of course, is the central banking. You can say it one of two ways. You can say government got too big. It's just become a cancer on society. And what that breeds is it breeds corruption, and it breeds all the wrong kinds of people are making money. That's right. If you bribe officials, if you do rent seeking, if you, you know, capture those kinds of interests, now all of a sudden you can thwart your enemies, you can, you know, put up impossible hurdles for them, you can harass them with the IRS, you can do all these things, and you can basically, the worst members of society are getting way too much money. The people out there who are trying to be productive and, you know, build things and grow economies, for the large part, if you know, small, medium business are getting absolutely slaughtered. If you can do it on a big scale, you know, yes, you can be a, do a Facebook, and yes, you can do some big thing that on the internet and, you know, become a billionaire. Absolutely, you can do those things. But for the vast majority of people, it's a very, very tough headwind situation. And so you've got this environment where at the very, very high level, government got too big, causing all kinds of problems. The thing that allows governments to get big and the thing that feeds the whole thing is the broken and corrupt monetary system. And that's fiat banking. That's it's fiat currency and it's fractional reserve banking. Yeah, add those two things together and it's the root of all of this situation. And so in an environment where some disaster happens, the price of all assets is going to get hit, we're going to go into a recession, whatever. But then there is a follow-up period and there's a realization that, oh, well, Bitcoin is the solution. Me as an individual, what the hell can I do to protect myself from that calamity on a lot of different levels? What can I do so that if, you know, there's a banking crisis and there's a bail-in like there was in Cyprus and my bank account just gets chopped in half? Well, what could I do to have protected myself? I could have had some wealth in Bitcoin. There's a geopolitical crisis. You know, I'm in the Ukraine and Russia invades, or I'm in Taiwan and China invades. And I was like, well, how do I escape this situation? How do I get my family to safety and take, you know, more than the clothes on my back? You can't take your real estate, your stock certificates in your local businesses that are worthless. Good luck getting gold across a border. You're lucky to walk out with the clothes on your back, but you can have a phrase in your head, Bitcoin is your solution. And so we've kind of seen this already play out. The Bitcoin bungee solution. When war broke out with Ukraine, we saw huge sell-off in risk assets. And it's funny that Bitcoin is called a risk asset, but a big part of the 2021 bubble was a whole bunch of people and Silicon Valley and things. It's like, oh, this is it's like the next tech. And so a lot of people who came in as tech investors. Now we're in the process of washing all of those out because they're just wrong. Right, the reason Bitcoin's price has gone down from 70 down to 15, now back up to 30, that was a process of washing out all of these risk-on investors who think it's just another tech, because it's not. It's not just another tech. It's something so much more important. It is actually a risk-off asset, is what it really is. It is your protection from all of this calamity. And so just like some of the people in Ukraine found out who realized they could get their wealth out of the country, you have this situation where the risk-on asset people have been washed out. The risk off asset people are starting to accumulate, and that's this accumulation period right now. And you get this situation where you have, like I started using the example before, Ukraine, war breaks out, risk off asset, sell off, prices go down. Then real world use cases of Bitcoin, it's like, oh my God, people are escaping Ukraine with money in their pocket, which they never could have done without Bitcoin. It's actually quite useful. People all over the world start thinking, maybe I need to store some of my wealth in Bitcoin. You had a follow up, you know, that happened within days. In the weeks and months later, what happened? You know, Russians were having their football clubs stolen. They're having their yachts stolen. These are people. You know, they're just people. Their governments did something bad, and America just starts grabbing their private assets from private individuals who have committed no crime. The whole rest of the world looks at that and go, "What if my country does something stupid and America is not happy?" What? And so it's like maybe I need money in my bank account. The assets that I own could be taken. And so what is something that I can take with me wherever I want? I have plausible deniability. It's in my head. It's decentralized. Can't be stolen. I need some Bitcoin too. And it's this process, this Bitcoin bungee process, where some new calamity happens. Price of most assets, including Bitcoin, goes down. And then Bitcoin responds very, very strongly. And so now with that model in mind, now we get to the situation of, okay, Max, now make some of your famous predictions. It's like, geez, which crisis is going to go first? How much is it going to bungee down? How much is it going to go bungee up? In which order does it happen? Do you get 3, 4, 5 hits of down, 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 down before you get some massive recoil? I'm like, dude, this is just getting hard. Or what I do know is all roads lead to Bitcoin. So if you just want to skate to where the puck will be, Bitcoin is where it's at. Now, you also have to live your life and you want a long road. So there's right now, there's basically just two assets in my portfolio, Bitcoin and cash, right? If things go down or for a long extended period, doesn't bungee back for a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, whatever it is, I've got enough cash. I'm going to be fine. But when it does bungee back, I'm going to be stupendously wealthy, and I can take it with me anywhere in the world, no matter what country I'm in, no matter how things break down. I've got that as my backup and can take my wealth with me. So it's the most liquid and the most portable thing that I know out there. So it's a very, very special asset class.
I want to take a moment to share something very important right now. Are you trying to figure out how to protect your savings from the banking collapse, which has already started, and the coming financial crisis? Most banks will fail. Deposits that are not insured by the FDIC will be lost, and there will be bank bail-ins, and this collapse in the banking system will lead to chaos in the financial system. Banks also provide loans to real estate investors. So what do you think is going to happen to lending in the event of a banking and a financial crisis? You can be proactive and position your savings to protect it and also have access to it to use it to buy discounted assets by positioning it in your own banking system through the infinite banking concept strategy. Producers Wealth has put together a presentation at yourownbankingsystem.com where you will learn how to position capital outside of the banking system and the Wall Street casino, just like the ultra wealthy, to protect it and create a pool of tax-free liquid capital to capitalize on the massive opportunity to buy discounted assets, which is coming. You can access the presentation at yourownbankingsystem.com. That's yourownbankingsystem.com. Another example, I think, that we can add to that is we just recently saw that. So when the three banks went under, which two of them were crypto banks, right? Silvergate and Signature. So you would think the knock-on effect would be, oh, crypto would just be completely demolished. And initially, yeah, I mean, initially there's a pullback, but then the bungee came in. And then we actually saw Bitcoin go up. And I mean, that was kind of the moment. I think there was, I felt just from looking, standing on the outside and looking in, I felt like there's almost a philosophical kind of mindset shift happening when it comes to that. To your point, it was so speculative. It was so frothy. Everybody wants to get rich and buy into it. You have Super Bowl ads. You have, you know, Larry David from Curb Your Enthusiasm and all these folks with the crypto hoopla, and it was kind of different. Now it's kind of like people are seeing it, you know, and again, this is just kind of my observation, is it's more like, no, this is just, it's money, you know, it's, and currencies fluctuate daily the same way that Bitcoin does. And it was interesting to see what happened when the banks went under to Bitcoin.
Yeah. I mean, if ever there was a situation where in the midst of a banking crisis, you would expect Bitcoin to suffer, it would be that banking crisis where the three biggest crypto banks were attacked. I would say attacked. Yep. I mean, it's a bit of a coincidence that the three banks that are crypto-friendly banks and service much of the industry got hit so hard. And the fact that Bitcoin bungeed so quickly, I mean, within days, and so well, you know, then what, got knocked from 20 down to 15, and then, you know, a month later, it's up to 30. Like, that was an impressive bungee. And it really gave me heart that a lot of people understand what's going on. And another component to the bungee is, like, we got to put the tinfoil hats on here big time, because it gets into the conspiracy theory here. It's like, definitely Bitcoin is a thorn in their side. I mentioned the concept of bail-ins just a minute ago here, like Cyprus 2013. And I think bail-ins were absolutely a part of their plan. And I think Bitcoin has taken it off the table for them. If they ever just chop people's bank accounts in half, I mean, you would see Bitcoin go absolutely parabolic, and you could not get a better marketing thing for Bitcoin. So Bitcoin is already working. It is already doing its job. It is already starting to corner them. It has taken one of their really cool chips off the table. They really liked it. After 2013, and they did it in Cyprus at the G20 meetings and things like that, they talked about it, they workshopped the ideas, and then they went home and they put it on the book. So it was on the laws. It was in the laws in all the different countries, including America, including Australia. It was they made the laws, and they can do it whenever the hell they want. And I think Bitcoin has taken it off the table. I don't think they're going to use that anymore. So that's like a really powerful message. But as you say, it's a great, and we can go through crisis after crisis after crisis. You will find the Bitcoin bungee in operation.
I think to your point, a video that was leaked from the FDIC meetings, I believe it was board members, lawyers, there were some bankers in there, where the gentleman in this video is on all over the internet, it was on YouTube, but where they basically were, you know, to your point, saying, I think it was last year that, oh yeah, well, bail-ins, yeah, they're going to happen. They're going to happen. And then they were talking about how, you know, they were joking, and this is behind closed doors, where, oh, the public, well, we have to get the public to trust the banking system. And then they were kind of like chuckling and saying, well, you know, so they shouldn't, but we should get them to kind of do that. You really are starting, I mean, I think people, if the first three and then the First Republic went under, I mean, you're starting to see all the small banks being gobbled up and the medium banks, all of them being eliminated because, you know, as the Bank for International Settlement said, there are too many banks. I think there's like 4,800 banking licenses in the United States. Like, how do you bring in a CBDC with 4,800 banking licenses? It's almost impossible. You need to basically consolidate the entire banking system, have the Fed member banks remain, maybe a handful of others. I've heard like different numbers, whether it's 3, whether it's 10, whether it's 15, and so forth. So yeah, I mean, this definitely then serves as a life raft. What is some of the things that you're seeing, how they're coming after that? Because I mean, obviously this is on the table with, you know, in my kind of worldview, I think the IRS is going to be used as a tool to go after a lot of crypto investors, which we've always warned people to, you know, be on top of that. Mm-hmm. And you know, what do you see from the attack vectors? Because it looks like they're coming from that angle. Then there's also legislation. Gary Gensler is on Capitol Hill constantly talking. What do you see from the kind of the threat to it or the attack by governments?
So centralization is always their goal, and you kind of talked about that with the banking system. I think it's important history there. So let's go back a little bit and understand this. So prior to the Great Depression, with you know the U.S. Population at less than half of what it is now, there were 27,000 different banks in this country. 27,000 different ones. After the Great Depression, it got chopped almost in half. I think it went down to about 14,000. And it stayed there for quite a while, still about the 1980s and the savings and loan crisis. And then that got whittled down. And right, we're down to around about 5,000 banking licenses now. And I think they're going to use this next, we're going to see a lot more happen over the next year or two. And they'll see them get whittled down. And it's just an opportunity for, you know, the little banks. I mean, they're attacking the little banks in a very, very clear way. You know, two clear ways they're doing it. They're deliberately making the consumer fearful of small banks because they say it told you outright. Janet Yellen said it right there in front of Congress. She said, we will protect the big banks. We cannot have a banking crisis at that scale. But little banks, we might not protect all of them because if, you know, just a few, you know, 10,000 customers lose all their money, you know, that's not going to, you know, rock the system. So we'll let those ones die. And so she's encouraging people to be a run on the bank of all small banks. She's like telegraphing everyone, put your money in big banks, forcing there to be a run on banks and small banks and creating the crisis that she wants to see. Why does she want to see this crisis? Because her buddies and her team get to consolidate and buy up those little banks for pennies on the dollar, like happened to Credit Suisse, like happened with First Republic. And so, you know, this is part of the agenda that they're doing. They're going to continue that consolidation, which helps them bring in that CBDC. So understanding that long history is important because, you know, in every other industry, you know, there's generally, you know, there's more shoe manufacturers than there were, you know, 100 years ago. There are more, you know, restaurants. There are more. If you double the population, you should double the amount of competition in all the given markets. But wherever government gets involved to help the consumer, they come in with an enormous amount of regulation, which destroys little business. It's targeted to destroy little businesses and grow the big businesses. And we're seeing that. So over the course of a century, you know, we're seeing that kind of consolidation in the banking industry. You'll see the same thing in healthcare. You'll see the same thing in defense. You'll see it everywhere where government has its fingerprints. The more the government's involved, the more the real economy, the small businesses is destroyed, and you get the have-nots and the have-yots. That destruction of the middle class is always their agenda. Yeah. I'm not sure if I answered your question properly there, but I thought that was an important place to go to.
Yeah, it is. And it's, and you brought up kind of the destruction of the middle class. It's sort of this Hunger Games society that is evolving, because, you know, what happened during, you know, 2020, even from March 2020 and onwards, that whole operation, the COVID operation, was to knock out small and medium businesses. They were the targets. Your Target, your Walmart, your Home Depot, your Costco, all of these huge stores, big box stores, stayed open. All the small competitors were closed, and they were the main beneficiaries along with Amazon. So it's almost like you're starting to see this now in every single kind of like system that's out there, whether it's the healthcare system, there's consolidation going on there, whether it is the banking system, whether it is small and medium businesses and the banks. I mean, money is the lifeblood of an economy, or currency. Let me refer to it correctly. Currency is. And by kind of consolidating the banks now, who lends to small business and medium businesses? It's your smaller banks. It's your medium, your regional banks. They're the biggest lenders in the United States. You know, JP Morgan Chase is a different customer than your small business person just out in, you know, middle of America. So it's going to make it even harder for those folks. So alternative systems, alternative currencies, you know, Bitcoin is again, the roads lead back there. Here's another interesting thing you brought up. The Great Depression. I was looking at this of community currencies. Catherine Austin Fitz talks about that as a solution. And there was over 3,000 community currencies just during the Great Depression in the United States. That's almost like, I don't know how many counties there are in the U.S., but there was a lot of those already. So in times of kind of distress, in times of chaos, in times when storms are coming to, you know, the storm clouds are breaking, the storm is there. It looks like that's kind of been a kind of a life raft for folks, and now you have a digital option.
Yeah, it's. I mean, really, when I discovered Bitcoin, the only reason I chose to learn about it was to tell the person who told me about it why it wasn't going to work. Your silly magic internet money is not going to work. And I just went deeper and deeper and deeper, and I knew my monetary history very, very well, and I was like, oh my god, this solves humanity's biggest problem. And the follow-on effects is just absolutely incredible. So it's something very, very special. And I just can't conceive of a portfolio that doesn't have some exposure to Bitcoin. Like it is the get out of jail free card in so many instances. So it has to be in everyone's portfolio. And we're doing a really good job of getting there. I'm very, very impressed with its growth because it is such a paradigm shift. But we also have the best marketing team in the world in the Federal Reserve. So we got to congratulate them for doing a good job.
I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors, Penumbra Solutions. Live Settlements investments have allowed financial and banking institutions to not only buy their equity contractually, but also diversify their capital from any economic, market, and geopolitical risk. It's been part of the billion-dollar blueprint followed by institutional investors. If you're an accredited investor, you can also now participate in this vehicle with enormous growth potential. You can watch an informational webinar presented by one of the premier organizations providing live settlement investments, Penumbra Solutions, at cashflowninja.com/live settlements. That's cashflowninja.com/live settlements. The password to access that webinar is Penumbra, all lowercase. Yeah. So with the banking stuff now too, another thing that I wanted to bring up about that was, what was it like? Hank Paulson had to go to Congress in the U.S. and beg for like $700 billion in 2008. And then Jamie Dimon of JP Morgan Chase comes out and this backstop, because you're not allowed to call it a bailout anymore. It's rebranded, it's remarketed, it's not a bailout, it's a backstop. We're just going to backstop all the big banks. Mm-hmm. And then he comes out and nonchalantly kind of says, oh, well, you know, it's probably going to be like $2.3 trillion, which I didn't even have to go to Congress for. So, this will have kind of initially an inflationary effect too, but I just wanted to bring it in that you're saying is, because a lot of folks think, you see all the marketing in the alternative asset space to doomsday, you know, Mad Max waking up, you know, or hyperinflation. We see all those kind of ads. You're going to have a little bit of both, right? What do you see with that? You're going to have everybody that's gone to a store knows inflation's rampant, but there are these shock effects that these crises will bring that'll be very initially very deflationary, right? And then you'll have the bungee cord.
Yeah, this is correct. And this it's very important to know that the cartel, the banking cartel that profits from the system, they profit in two main ways. They profit when they get to print money, of course. I think most people understand that. But what most people don't understand is another big chunk, maybe even bigger portion of their profit is in creating the boom bust cycle. So they did it in the Great Depression as well. They're doing the exact same thing now as they did then, is they're restricting the lending. So the governments can turn on the taps and print money, right? Most people know that part. What most people don't know is that 90% of money creation happens at the commercial banks, not the Federal Reserves. So the Federal Reserve increases a portion of the money, right? But then the banks then get to use fractional reserve banking. That money initially goes to the banks, and now they are able to lend out money, significantly more money. If the Federal Reserve prints a billion, then the commercial banks collectively get to go, somewhere in the order of $10 to $50 billion, right? And that is new money created. So the vast majority of money creation happens at the commercial banks. When they say, and they're all very public about it, they say, we're a little bit scared about the economy. We're going to restrict our lending practices. We're going to have tighter lending practices. Instead of lending 90% on real estate to anyone with a 600 FICO score, we're going to lend 80% to only people with over a 750, or all these kinds of things, right? That way more than money printing at the Fed dramatically reduces the money supply. And it's extremely deflationary. Because people just the amount of money there to buy up purchases and keep things high is just not there, and so as a result, the price of assets gets absolutely clobbered, real estate, stocks, you name it, and then the banks, they get to come in, hand them off to their friends, put things in their own name, they get to scoop up all of the assets for pennies on the dollar after the crash happens that they created. Right. And that is just as big a profit center as the money printing that they originally did. So they cause these booms and busts. They like these booms and busts. And they make their money when they get to get First Republic for pennies on the dollar, when they get to get your house for pennies on the dollar. Like, I know I had a buddy who actually went and did the, when he looked at the tax records on the, in the Tampa area, we were talking about that earlier, in the Tampa area. There was a whole bunch of properties went into foreclosure in 2008. If the banks put them up to like auction, like go through the normal process,
yep,
then it would have caused a much bigger problem, because then there would have been all of these listed transactions and sales that happened, and the price gets way down. Now everything else is upside down and it becomes a snowball. It's a big disaster. So there's wisdom to it, but they planned for this. So there's evil to it as well. There was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of just single family homes that went to Berkshire Hathaway for $1,000. I mean, these were things that were worth $100,000, in 2006, or probably worth about $30,000 in, 2008, 2009. And he got hundreds of them for $1,000, and it's just handed off to your friends, and that money comes back to, in the bribes in some other ways, things like that. But you can actually go and see the tax records of these properties being handed off in hundreds at a time for $1,000 each. And those things were renting for $1,300 a month, So it's obscene that these things happen, but this is the nature of the corrupt system. So that's where we're at.
And if you look at how folks are preparing, it was even in the news. I think Zero Hedge covered Buffett yesterday, not, big in cash, one of his biggest cash positions again, as you mentioned, Berkshire Hathaway. And then I believe it was Blackstone that now put together another fund to buy distressed real estate. They're not letting a lot of folks out of their fund for commercial real estate, but they're putting together another fund. So as the one fund, they're trying to hold on to that. They're preparing for this, because that was going to be my next question. You've been a longtime real estate investor. Like, with all these storms coming together, what does that look like? Housing is very, the U.S. is huge. lots of different markets and so forth. But what does that look like? And then also some comments on the commercial real estate crash, which have started. The media just hasn't told people, everybody, right?
Yeah, commercial real estate is in all kinds of trouble. Oh, definitely, that's already started. I mean, so we'll obviously it's market by market segment, but we'll just speak at high levels here and speak in generalities. Yeah, residential is certainly taking a hit. And people, it's important for people to understand, go back and look. People don't think about this, but in the 2008 crisis, as we call it, the peak in real estate prices was 2006. Yeah, it was a good solid 18 months later from when the peak happened to when actually it was the oh shit moment where everything just absolutely falls apart. And so, you know, we are pretty close. Actually, I've got my, I won't show it to you, but I'm looking at the Case-Shiller thing here. And we are now about 10 months into that beginning of that process, right? And it's very important to know that Case-Shiller index is just like it's a good rule of thumb to use as a proxy for a real estate market. It's about 3 months in arrears. So we know just firsthand, you look on Zillow, it's just like price drop, price drop, price drop, price drop. We know there's another 3 months there. So we're already 12 months into this kind of crisis. And so we're not long. A lot of people are predicting, you know, recession here at the end of this year. I think it's going to happen either at the end of this year or next year. And it's real estate's going to get hit. But here's the thing, and this is where just all bets are off. They can't let it crash. You know, they can choose to let it go a long way, and they'll do it in such a way. Remember, these guys are always making decisions to serve them and not you. And so they'll let it go. They'll let the real estate market go a long way down. They get to scoop up pennies on the dollar, foreclose on people, steal their homes, et cetera, to a point. But there is a point where it completely breaks the entire system and everything. Then they lose the goose that lays the golden egg. They lose the Federal Reserve. They lose the banking system. They lose all of it. And so there is a point where we all know they will jump back in and bail out, just like you talked about in 2008 happened. That's absolutely going to happen. And we know these things are always exponential. So they have to get bigger. Right now, I think the Federal Reserve balance sheet sits at around $9 trillion. Yeah, before the 2006, I think it was less than a trillion. And then after 2008, it grew to about $4 trillion. Now this jumped up. At the time, it was the biggest expansion of the Fed balance sheet. Now, you know, COVID was the next biggest one. And this next crisis is going to be even bigger again. And so I wouldn't be surprised by the end of this decade, the Federal Reserve balance sheet's in the order of $25 trillion. That is an enormous amount of money printing that needs to happen. And that's just, it leads to inflation, of course. And then they'll use inflation as an excuse to crash the economy again. It's such a ridiculous strategy. It's like, I heard someone say the other day, and I thought it was quite a good analogy. It's like if you've got termites in your house, taking a blowtorch to the house to kill the termites is basically what you're doing. It's like, oh, we've got inflation caused by money printing. I know what we'll do. We'll just cause a recession so that we'll take all the money off as many people as possible, jack interest rates up so no one can afford anything, and cripple the economy, and then we'll have inflation under control. But they still got to print the money. They still get to buy up all the assets, and now they just buy them up for even cheaper. So very, very, you have to either laugh or cry because it's such a broken and corrupt system. And I think I said it at the top of the show, the problem is government has just gotten too big. Yep. And when government gets that big, you can't not have exorbitant levels of corruption, rent seeking, insider play, and all the things that go along with it. And when you have an economy that is that corrupt, the productive people can't hold up the non-productive rent seekers for that much longer. And you get, so, you know, this is why socialism and communism always collapses. The productive people can't hold up and support all the unproductive people who are the rich ones who are rent seeking. It just doesn't work. And eventually it collapses.
I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors. My friend Dave Zook says, you can be conventional or you can be wealthy. Pick one. At The Real Asset Investor, Dave and his team bring their investors high-yield investment opportunities across several asset classes for cash flow, tax impact, and equity growth. He and his team are one of the top five ATM operators in the country, and they have an investment opportunity available to accredited investors right now in the ATM space. To learn more about their ATM funds that produce tax-free cash flow, visit therealassetinvestor.com. That's therealassetinvestor.com. What's very interesting, too, is we haven't even brought up the AI kind of effect on the economy, which seems to be in turning like just into exponential phase. Every week, it just gets turned up. So I was looking at that the other day and just reading and doing research. I mean, the first time I looked at this, you know, obviously you get a your first response is, wow, I could utilize this and I can leverage this and kind of bring this into my business and, you know, be so much more productive and so forth. And then the second thought is, oh, wow, this is going to basically knock out 80% of jobs right now in this economy. And that's not even factored in. So you got all these things going on. You got AI replacing. I mean, that's why if you look at the layoffs, it started at the tech companies, right? Mm-hmm. The big tech companies, and it's now seeming to make its way through it. And it's not surprising. I know there's a lot of theories behind it. It's not surprising that media companies are now laying off. They're either going under or they're laying off so many people, because you can now have a ChatGPT write your, you know, Vice article for you with all the talking points that you want to get in. You don't need a human anymore. So it's interesting to see that it's already like filtering. I mean, it's already, I don't think people fully grasp it yet, but all these people getting laid off, yes, there's not a lot of eyeballs on them anymore. Nobody trusts them. But it's also, you got to look at it from the AI angle, right?
So this is the only counterweight I can see to. We could go through like a dozen like calamities that are absolutely on the surface about to cause a crash, which will cause money printing, which will do all that. There's one thing, one saving grace on it, because historically, inflation is the thing that unwinds this. Like, it took Rome like 400 years of, you know, poor financial management before eventually it collapsed through inflation, right? Inflation is the final death nail in the coffin. But AI and a huge productive leap forward is the only thing that could possibly kick the can down the road at this point. Once the inflation hits, which we're in the middle of it for sure, then the only thing that kind of reverses it is a massive increase in productivity. And for the people, so understand that, when people think about that inflation number, a really good way to think of it is it's just a ratio, total amount of money in the world, total amount of goods and services that money is chasing. Lots more money, they bid up the price of goods and services. Reduce that money, you know, they can't bid up the price, you get deflation, right? It's actually a ratio between goods and services and money. If there is a massive skyrocket in productivity so that human beings are creating double the amount of goods, it's actually extremely deflationary. Well, but now that will never happen. I want to be crystal clear on that. They will always print the money to absorb all of that. And so they'll steal the wealth, what should happen in a fair and just economy. These incredible things like this AI and all this stuff, you say, well, it could mean that like 80% job layoffs. Yes, but it should also lead to an 80% drop in the cost of living.
Yep.
In order to, you know, if you get to fire 80% of your workforce, you're still producing the same amount of goods or more. What that means is the competition should make the cost of those goods go down. And what happens is those people who are now unemployed, when their cost of living goes down by 80%, they can pick up a little bit of work here and there, and things are going to work out actually pretty good. Like, life gets better with technology in introductions. However, at the same time, you've got these guys stealing the value of all of that, productivity increase, and the productivity goes up through inflation. But certainly there'll be hits and jolts and things that go back and forward, and there'll be, you know, which one's going to have the most powerful effect is the money print. I think what's going to happen is, you know, recession will hit, money printing will go crazy, and that'll be more of a jarring, quick thing. This AI thing, I think we're at like at a hockey stick moment, but it is going to change. Instead of productivity increasing at like something along the lines of 2% per year, I think we might see a jolt here, and now all of a sudden productivity might start increasing at 3-5% a year, and it will change trajectory. But it will still take many decades to play out, I think. And so the bigger, it has the potential to solve a lot of problems. Unfortunately, the corrupt system, the money printing, is going to steal all of the value that it would have brought. And it's going to do so quickly and in advance. So we never even get to feel the benefits of those kinds of things.
Yeah. And it's like the internet, right? That created so many incredible opportunities and jobs and connected the world and so forth. It's just interesting the timing of it where, you know, if I put my tinfoil sombrero on, I'm like, it's part of like resetting kind of the new economy in a way, which is interesting. So a very, very core thing here that I picked up from you from solutions and is decentralization. We have systems that are in the process of collapsing. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I mean, it's going to be very tough to stop them from collapsing. It's, you know, what's the, there's a term that was brought up the other day. It, you know, people talk about a controlled demolition, managed decline. That's the new mainstream media word. It's a managed decline. I'm like, you mean like a controlled demolition? No. It's a managed decline.
Yeah.
But so decentralization is a huge kind of solution to this. What are some of the things that we could leave our listeners and our viewers with from a solution-based stuff in all areas, right? So you've got access to land in middle of America. There's access to food, that kind of stuff. What are some practical things that folks can do to make them, you know, just less dependent on, you know, some of these systems that are collapsing?
Yeah, I mean, this is where you go. If you want to go to the nth degree, you go full prepper mode. But there's a lot of different categories to do this, ways to do this, and means to do this. I'm in a wealth position. And I've structured myself in a way where I might get my wealth. I can teleport it anywhere in the world. I can go to where the food is, to where the sunshine is, to where the freedom is. All right. I can do that. Not everyone can do that. And they don't have the wealth and the wherewithal to do that. And so for them, they need to think about things like food and weapons and staying in place and community around them. And those things are all very, very valid and very, very sensible things to do. But there's different scales to which you should do this. So, but as you said, decentralization is the solution to this. Making yourself powerful, making yourself valuable is meaning you're going to have a lot of networks. You're going to have a lot of people that you can rely on because they rely on you. And so improving your skills, improving your resources, you know, I'm a huge advocate of getting rich. Like, get rich. It's really, really, really important. Get rich because, like, in the Great Depression, for example, you know, when people are like throwing themselves off buildings, or it's like, you know, we'll work for food, we're in the sandwich boards. You have to understand that was the bottom 30, 40% of the country. And it's horrible to see. There's still 60% of people doing all right. You know, yep. Make sure you're in that 60%. So there's a lot of ways to work hard and get to that level. But I would say the thing that everybody can do for sure is understand cryptocurrency, know how to secure it, know how to store it safely, and have a portion of your wealth in Bitcoin. It's going to be the currency of the black market. And as you know, centralization and government, desperate governments do desperate things. So they start doing things like outlawing gold, like they do in the Great Depression. They'll do all these kinds of things. And what will spring up is a bigger black market. You might need to bribe bureaucrats. You might need to get your food. You might need to do all kinds of things to get the basics of life. And the black market just springs up. And I think Bitcoin will be the currency of the black market. And the more they tighten their grip, to quote Princess Leia, the more star systems will slip through their fingers, meaning the more controlling they get, the bigger the black market gets. And yep. So having the currency of the black market is going to be a very, very important thing. So financially, that's what you can do. And then you work hard to become resilient, both in your skill set and your resources. You can have some food, have some guns, have some ammo, have some skills, you're going to be valuable and you're going to be just fine.
Yeah. There's already communities. It's been fascinating to see that there's already communities that are springing up and folks that are, you know, quote unquote, I mean, this is the future of black markets, but they're like, we will accept crypto for the food that we grow and the meat and so forth, and we'll ship it. And there's already people, you know, bartering. So it's fascinating to see this stuff already starting to spring up. So this is great. Max, where can you just released a webinar that you're hosting. Where can folks watch that? And also, where can they follow you? Where can they stay in touch and reach out? And where can they stay informed of all of the many projects that you're involved with?
Sure. You know what, I just completed a webinar, and I go through a lot of these. It's very content rich. I know when most people watch webinars, you have to sit through the first half an hour of the person showing in their trips of a vacation to Europe to prove how important they are. I don't do that. It drives me absolutely insane. I just get straight into the content, and I just literally lay out different plans for people, and give people the exact formula for how everything is going to play out. So to watch that, there's no easy way. I'll send you a link. And if I'm assuming there's a place in the description or something, you can put the link to that.
Yep.
So I'll send you the link for that. But then if you want to stay tuned, I'm known as Contrarian Dude on YouTube. So if you just go to YouTube and look for Contrarian Dude, you should see me. Max Wright will pop up. Search for Contrarian Dude, Max Wright YouTube, and you'll see my channel there. And you can go ahead and subscribe. And that's a great way to keep in contact with me.
Awesome. And for folks listening, I'll just put it at cashflowninja.com/Max. So cashflowninja.com/Max. And then, the last video you did, I remember this. This is a couple of years ago, but you called that Bitcoin rally. Like, I mean, it is like, I still remember it. And I'm like, I saw that you doing the presentation and looking at what Bitcoin was going to do in the next 12 to 18 months. And I mean, literally it was, it was very well called, history before it happened. So make sure you check out that webinar, cashflowninja.com/Max.
Thank you. So I just updated. I do this fun thing kind of every year or two. I call it my Inception video. And if you're familiar with the movie Inception, yep. It's a dream within a dream within a dream. So what I do with my Inception video is I go through and show, it's like, hey, here's this video on YouTube. Here's the date. Here's what I said. I click play that it was. And it's just like a video within a video within a video. I go through all my past calls. And I kid you not, I shock myself when I go through and I make those videos. I'm just like, oh my God, dang. Oh, I picked that like a dirty nose. How did that happen?
Yep.
And it's they're really fun videos. And I just kind of updated that one too. So that's a fun one to watch.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming back on the show and connecting and just sharing your knowledge and providing so much value for all my listeners and my viewers. This has been a blast.
Thank you so much. Happy to do it.
And thank you to you, the listeners and the viewers, for spending your most valuable resource, your time, once again with me at the Cashflow Ninja. Appreciate every single one of you. Everything Cashflow Ninja is at cashflowninja.com. Cashflowninja.com. You could go to cashflowninja.com on the homepage and purchase a copy of my book, The 21 Best Cashflow Niches, Creating Wealth and the Best Alternative Cashflow Investments. You can subscribe to my newsletter, The Best Cashflow Niches Newsletter at cashflowninja.com. In this newsletter, you will get every single month a well-researched new alternative cashflow niche. And you can join my mastermind at cashflowninja.com. It's called Cashflow Nirvana. If you're a business owner or an investor that's looking to protect and build wealth during turbulent times, you can join a community of business owners and investors that's doing the exact same thing. Until next time, live infinitely. This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation, and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.